following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 2nd, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this sunny and beautiful Tuesday afternoon in the Auburn Opelika area. We've got a great show on tap for you today over the next couple of hours. And we told you yesterday on the way out that we were going to have a special guest to start the show. And we do have a special guest to start the show this afternoon. We're going back to some news we learned about a couple of weeks ago. Christian, happy Tuesday to you, my friend. We're going back to some news from a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
The fact that Auburn football has more national championships now than they ever have before. And the most recent one that they were able to go back and claim was in 2004. And we have the man who was the quarterback of that 2004 team. You hear him on the Auburn Sports Network. The national champion, Jason Campbell, joins us on the phone lines now. Jason, it's so great to have you on, my man. And we're so appreciative of your time today.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thank you for having me on as well. Enjoyed a great Labor Day weekend. And now kicking off for a second week of football.
Well, there's so much that we want to get to with you today. And again, we appreciate you starting the show with us this afternoon here on ESPN 106.7. And we are going to talk about that 2004 team, which is now being honored, recognized, and celebrated as national champions. Walk us through the emotions you felt when Auburn made the announcement that, yes, they were claiming seven others, but that your team, your guys, your season in 2004 is now recognized as a national championship season?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for us was, you know, now to be, you know, first kind of, you feel like you get that, the icing on the cake, just from the standpoint that we've always felt like we was champions, even when we won that year. We got national championship rings and everything because, you know, we've done everything that we could possibly do human-wise to be able to contend in a national championship game. And there's nothing else we could do. And the fact that you had to be punished but not being able to play in the game was, you know, was kind of ridiculous just from that standpoint, because it's not like we played in a conference that wasn't a challenging conference. It's not like we didn't play a tough schedule that compete with Oklahoma and USC. It's just that we started the season ranked behind USC and Oklahoma in the computer system, and they kept them that way no matter if they lost. I mean, no matter if they won by 1 point or 3 points, you know, to opponents that they should have won by 2 touchdowns, the computer system didn't move them. And they punished us that year when we played on the road in Tuscaloosa in the Iron Bowl, which is one of the hardest games to play in because you throw the schedules out the window and the records out the window. And all of a sudden, because we won, it was 21-6, and they got a late touchdown to make 21-13. They punished us for that and everything, and didn't let us jump Oklahoma. But, you know, no disrespect to USC, no disrespect to Oklahoma, all great teams. But you never know what would happen when you got a chance to play the game. Like I said, we was a very close football team and everything, and had a lot of reason to want to play in that game as well. But, you know, people always say, well, this team would have won or that team would have won. You never know, because that's why you play the game. How many times we watched the Super Bowl where, you know, you think this team is going to win, but the other team wins.
Yeah.
That's why you play the game. But not to be able to participate in that game was hard. But at the same time, we've always felt like we were national champs.
Well, all is right in the world now. And Jason, we appreciate you for hopping on here with us. Christian Griffin here with Jacob on ESPN 106.7. You dive through this 2004 schedule. 13-0, 7-0 at home, 4-0 away from home, and perfect, obviously, in conference play. You beat number 5 LSU 10-9. You go to Knoxville to beat number 10 Tennessee 34-10. You mentioned the Iron Bowl. Before that, you beat number 8 Georgia 24-6 before going on beating Tennessee again in Atlanta, and then Virginia Tech in New Orleans. Do you have a favorite of those games? Is it the Iron Bowl? Is there a different moment in there that, or a different game that stands out in your mind? And then a personal favorite moment from that 2004 season?
I would say game-wise, I would probably say beating Tennessee the second time in the SEC championship, because the first time we won, there was still a lot of chatter that, you know, that was a fluke and all that type of thing. So we look forward to playing them again. And it's always harder to beat a team twice in the same year, especially within your conference. So to be able to do it twice meant a lot, but to win a conference championship meant a lot as well. I think the biggest moment came in the LSU game, probably 4th and 12,
mm-hmm.
where we had a rollout play call, and it's either we hit it or the game's over. And we was able to hit Courtney Taylor against an all-out blitz from Coach Saban and Coach Muschamp at the time at LSU. And Courtney was able to get the right depth, and I was able just enough to get the ball off before getting hit. And Courtney made a great catch, and next thing you know, they gave us another opportunity to hit 3rd and 12 from 12-yard line, which was 3rd and goal, really. And we ended up hitting Courtney in the back of the end zone, and the place just went bananas. That's why I missed the LSU Auburn game, because it just always a crazy ending.
Yeah, yeah, we've talked a lot about that over the past several months and even the past couple of years. The fact that the LSU game hasn't been on the schedule the last few years looks like now, with that SEC schedule moving to 9 games, that the Tigers of LSU will work themselves back into that Auburn schedule. But, Jason, you had 2,700 yards that season, 20 touchdowns, just 7 interceptions, a magical year for you and the 2004 Tigers, now claiming and being recognized as national champions. And I know you said you may not know who would have won the game, but I had a chance to talk to head coach Tommy Tuberville a couple of weeks ago, and Jason, he was very confident that you guys would have won that game if you go up against USC in 2004.
Well, we had a lot of momentum, you know, and the thing about it is we were so pissed off because of the game in 03. You know, we didn't have our same coordinator that we had the year before when we lost out there in Southern Cal. You know, we dropped the pass going into the end zone late in that ball game to win the game. And then you come back our junior year, we try to keep the same system, but not the same person calling the plays that brought the system to Auburn. He was gone. Yeah, he was in Louisville as a head coach and by Vitrino. So no one on our staff at the time had any offensive coordinator experience. So the first 2 weeks was a headache, you know, of trying to figure things out and everything. Then we kind of got on the run, well, like 5 in a row. And then towards the end of the year, we end up winning like the last, I guess, 2 out of 4. And then, you know, you win the Alabama game and the Wisconsin game to finish the year. And you go undefeated the next year. But we kept our staff together. And that's the key. We kept our staff together. We changed one thing. We brought Coach Borges in as the coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew how to utilize everyone's ability and how to dissect the plays and how to get the best out of everybody. And to the point where you felt like you was unstoppable. And that's the difference. I tell people, we had a hunger to play them, you know, so there's a difference. And we had a defense to back that up, and we had special teams play that could back it up. It's not like we were just offensive heavy. We had a great defense and a great special team. So that's why I say you want the opportunity to play the game.
We're talking with Jason Campbell, former Auburn quarterback, part of the Auburn Sports Network, with us here on ESPN 106.7 during the Tuesday edition of On the Line, just getting underway on this September 2nd in 2025. Jason, before we get your thoughts on what you saw in Waco last Friday, we know last year the 04 team was recognized by Auburn pregame down the stretch for the 20-year anniversary. To your knowledge, or if you're able to share, is there any plans to kind of acknowledge this team and kind of re-celebrate this team now that they are claimed national champions in 04 for you guys?
I think the AD, his staff has kind of been sending out emails to everyone.
Okay.
To set something up later down in the year on the schedule for one of the home games to get everybody back here.
and try to get everybody recognized as a group as a whole. Again, like I said, last year we did it, played Vanderbilt, and the hardest thing about it was you're not able to get everybody, right? Because some guys got kids that playing high school football.
Sure.
And harder for them to get back if they don't live in state or live close by. It's just hard to get to them. So I'm pretty sure there'll be something that we'll come up with during the fall, but probably also maybe in the springtime where guys are not having kids playing on Friday nights or able, or coaching themselves. You know, we got some guys that are coaching football that was on that team, and have them have opportunity for them to be there as well.
We're talking with Jason Campbell, the national champion 2004 quarterback for the Auburn Tigers, and wanted your thoughts on last Friday's game as well, going back to the previous times. Other than the word hot, which I feel like has been a very common term for those that made the trip to Waco, what did you see from the Auburn Tigers that gives you a lot of confidence moving forward in this season?
Well, it definitely was hot. You know, I don't think as many places you can go is 92 degrees at 8 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock p.m.
Miserable.
But I say this, Auburn fans traveled very well. They were well represented in the heat and all. They showed up, got behind this football team. I say this, I learned a lot about this team that's already different than the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Once you go back to the last season is, you know, our offensive line looks like an SEC offensive line. You know, we were big up front. You know, we was able to move guys on that defensive front for Baylor, who's a well-respected team, coached by David Randall, who's at LSU on the national championship team as their defense coordinator. And I felt like up front, we didn't get away from it when we could have just said, you know what, Cam Coleman hadn't had no touches for real. Eric Singleton hadn't had many touches. Oh, Malcolm Simmons only had one catch.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find a way to get them the ball rather than worrying about winning the game.
Yeah.
And I think for us, it showed, you know, as a staff that our guys are like, hey, we're all about winning the game. Whatever the defense dictates is what we're going to do to win the game. Like, we can't get into the pleasing business, not the first game of the year. This game was big for a lot of reasons for this Auburn program to get going in the right direction. And I was proud of Coach Freeze, Coach Mitch, the fact that, you know, yes, I'm a quarterback. I like to throw the ball, too. And, you know, but at the end of the day, they couldn't stop us running the football.
Yeah.
Don't go away from it. You know, you did what you had to do to win the game. Like, the receiver's going to get there. There's going to be games. They're going to have Cam have 9-10 catches. You know, Aaron have catches. Malcolm have catches. Race. Their time is coming in those games. Because why? People are going to stack the box. And they're going to force you to throw the football. So, you know, it's not like you're going to be able to run the ball the way we did this first weekend, every weekend when we get against some of these tougher defensive fronts. So I thought that was a great confidence booster for our offensive line. I think defensively, I think we can tackle better. I think going into the first game is always the hardest game for defenses.
Sure.
For some reason, because you don't get a chance to hit your guys or tackle your guys to the ground during camp because you're trying to keep guys healthy. So when things are happening so much faster in games, and then you can actually hit someone, get them on the ground, you got to get used to tackling again. You haven't done that in months. So I expect the defense to tackle better next game. But I did like what the defense did on sudden change. You know, they got off the field on sudden change. They stopped the fourth and goal where Baylor could have went up 10-0. Champ Anthony makes that great play in the back of the end zone, knocked that ball away, which gave our offense a chance to go 98 yards and score a touchdown. That, to me, what changed the whole ball game.
In your eyes, and correct me if I'm wrong, as a quarterback, as soon as you break the huddle, the first thing you're looking at is the safeties. And when if you're Jackson Arnold and you break the huddle and every single time you feel like you're in second and three going right back to first and 10, you're seeing the safeties 12, 15 yards off the line of scrimmage. How easy does that make your job as a quarterback, just knowing that, man, you feel like the defense continues to sit in that too high shell, man, we're going to get 6 or 7 yards every single time running the football?
Yeah, the thing about it is the quarterback, you're like, dang, y'all not going to get a single safety so I can have a chance to throw a touchdown pass on one of you, corners or one of our big-time receivers. But, you know, if you're going to sit in two shells, then, yeah, you have to hand the ball off, because that's the thing. Like, you don't force it. Sometimes last year we would just try to force it, you know, just because statistically we was trying to, you know, make sure we got the statistics where we wanted them.
Sure.
But this game, heard Coach Freeze and you heard Jackson after the game say, hey, you know, we got to swallow our pride a little bit about our passing game and just have to keep taking advantage of what the defense is giving us and everything. So I just think when you see that true shell, I don't think we'll see that as much moving forward unless you got somebody that can stop the run with six-man boxes, and I say that's hard to do with this offensive line. So I do expect people to drop seven. They may show a two-shell pre-snap, but then at the snap of the ball, they go to a single high just to kind of disguise the quarterbacks a little bit. But overall, though, I think you did what you had to do to get the season going in the right direction.
Okay.
Now, I expect Ball State to stack the box and say, hey, you know what? If you beat us throwing the ball, you beat us throwing the ball. But most defensive coordinators, the one thing they don't like you to do is demoralizing, is get ran the ball on. And that's why I was more shocked that Dave Aranda continued to stay in that two shell as much as he did late in the second half. You know, when we was getting 6-7 yards a pop running the ball and everything. So, I understand we still have a great weapons outside. And it was game one. We did what we supposed to, because had we worried about getting guys catches and then we walk in here with an L, everyone has been talking about the loss. Do we have the right people in charge and all these different things?
Yep.
It's a lot better than walking there with a win. And you know there's things you still can work on to get better at.
No doubt about it. A very cool way to start the show for us here on this Tuesday afternoon during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Jason Campbell, former Auburn quarterback, a national champion winning quarterback, and he's on the Auburn Sports Network broadcast with Andy Burch and Brad Law and all the guys with us on the phone lines now. Man, awesome time talking to you. We really do appreciate your time, and we look forward to hopefully catching up with you soon, and I'm sure you guys are glad to be back inside Jordan-Hare Stadium this Saturday.
Oh, yeah, Jordan Harris is going to be rocking. First home game of the season, night game, so won't be as hot. I love this atmosphere at nighttime, especially in Jordan Harris. It gives us a tune-up for our guys that's now joining our program and guys that haven't seen it. Like, it's an electric atmosphere, so glad to be back home this weekend calling game.
Yep, we appreciate your time, my man, again. I hope to have you on again soon.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Jason Campbell, former Auburn quarterback, part of the Auburn Sports Network, with us to start the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Got a chance to talk to him about that 2004 team, his favorite games, his favorite memories, and why he and all of his guys believe, Christian, that that team deserved to be national champions. And what I take away from what he was saying was we already felt like champions. We already crowned ourselves champions. We determined we were champions, but it's got to be good, and he admitted that it was a good feeling to now see the year up in Jordan-Hare this Saturday, to know that those rings have the real meaning to it, that Auburn came out and claimed it too. I mean, that was what I took away from that, from Jason right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's to the point where you'll happily take success, right, behind the scenes of whatever job that you may be doing. And for Auburn football, that's kind of how it was. You were the guy that was behind the scenes making sure the company had success, right? But then boss man shouted you out personally, gave you that promotion,
right,
to where your name felt like it had weight to it. It had wealth. It had the royalty. And now that's what you feel like with this 2004 football team.
Yeah, really cool to have Jason Campbell. Again, former Auburn quarterback, color commentator for Andy Burcham on the Auburn football broadcast on the Auburn Sports Network. You can hear those guys this coming Saturday night on Wings 94.3. Had somebody text into our text box here really quick. It is open all show long, as it is every single day. 334-784-1067 says, I went to school with Jason at Auburn. Excellent football player and an even better human. And they enjoyed the interview with him. So shout out Jason Campbell for joining us again here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our first break in hour number one, come back and talk about whatever the heck that was in Chapel Hill last night. We talk about TCU North Carolina and a bad start for Billy B. We talk about that next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Again, thanks so much to Jason Campbell from the Auburn Sports Network and former Auburn quarterback for joining us on the phone lines to get the show started, talking about his 2004 national champion Tigers, plus what he saw from Auburn in Waco, and he had some good things to say. And Jason, look, he's a professional, yes, but he's just like everybody else, and he knows what the what the narratives were going to be if Auburn went into this game and lost against Baylor.
Oh, yeah.
And if they lost in the wrong way. He said, look, I'm a quarterback and like throwing the football too, but he was proud to see Hugh Freeze and the Tigers run the ball.
Well, that's what you feel like was so cool, was that learning factor, right? You felt like that was more than what the final score was. It was more of the fact of being able to make the game as simple as possible. And again, you heard him talk about it when I asked about the quarterback of, I know when you break the huddle, the first thing you do, you look at the strong safety, you look at the free safety, and if you're Jackson Arnold putting yourself in that standpoint or putting yourself in his eyes, how could you not smile and laugh when you break the huddle going, man, we have 213 yards of rushing right now. We're halfway through the fourth quarter, and you're still right there? All right, here we go. Hand it off.
Let's get seven more.
Hand
Ready?
It off. Here comes the jet sweep. Oh, you bit? Ha-ha, watch this.
Yep.
Take off right up the middle. Like, it's just, it makes a job so easy, and when you see guys being put in a spot to succeed, you feel like that's what the final score is going to reflect. But even more than the final score, even him being able to talk about it, yes, a professional, but also the football mind, the great football mind that understands how a football game should be played, knowing that wide receivers, they're going to get their name called plenty of times throughout the season, but more importantly, to get the job done. And it goes back to what I was talking about yesterday and the mentality of the receivers. Not once did you see lazy routes outside. Not once did you see them slack off and not try and draw attention. There was a couple times where it was just a wide open run and Cameron had stop and go, and it had the corner and the safety ready to bite on both of them just in case they threw him the football. Obviously you didn't need to, but things like that, showing the hustle plays, showing the effort plays, you could see the energy on the sidelines.
So if you missed our interview with Jason Campbell, you'll be able to go back and listen to the podcast version of the show later on today. Also, I know we had some issues with yesterday's show. It is up. It is posted. It is uploaded. So if you missed yesterday's show, you can go and check that out. But then our interview with Jason Campbell from to start the show today will be in today's version of the podcast. And not going to spend too much time on this. We got a few minutes before we get to our bottom of the hour break before you sit down and visit with Lee Scott Academy's head football coach Buster Daniel to talk about a 2-0 start for the Warriors as they get ready for region play this weekend against the Childersburg Tigers. But can we talk about what happened in Chapel Hill last night? Can we
talk? What did happen or what didn't happen?
I can tell you what did happen for TCU, and I can tell you what didn't happen for North Carolina. What did happen for TCU was they weren't scared of a 7-0 scripted start by North Carolina and just did whatever they wanted to do for four quarters. They also weren't scared of Michael Jordan being in the booth or being in town or any of the other famous people that rolled up and then left in the third quarter. I can tell you what didn't happen for North Carolina. They were not ready for TCU, and they don't have the dudes yet to compete with some of these big boy teams.
No, and after that scripted start, everybody lost their mind of, holy cow, look at that offense. Look at what they were able to do. Gio Lopez can be the guy. Well, he was the guy through about 2.5 quarters until former LSU transfer Max Johnson was subbed in. And credit to Max Johnson. He going through a couple gruesome injuries. Didn't think he'd play football again. Again, that was the starting quarterback, the lefty, if you remember, from LSU, who transferred to North Carolina. He got subbed in and went 9 of 11, threw for 103 yards and a touchdown. I think I could tell you who's going to be the starter next week just off of watching, unfortunately, that football game. But it simply went to, man, we talked about it on the show of, do you want to have confidence in Bill Belichick? Yes. But, man, college is a completely different level. And then I went back and said that Josh Hoover is one of the best quarterbacks in the entire country. And I think you saw exactly the reason why. Man, that first touchdown that he threw to the back pylon, you could not throw it any better. Threw it into the shirt pocket of his receiver. And talk about Jordan Dwyer, the transfer, his first game for TCU. 9 catches, 136 yards, and a touchdown because there was so much attention going to Eric McAllister. But Josh Hoover, 27 of 36, 284 through the air, 2 touchdowns, and an interception in there as well.
Pick.
And it was, one of those where if you didn't watch the game, you saw he threw a pick, but otherwise, there needs to be an asterisk in some sort of stat category.
I think TCU is a really good football team, and I think they are one of those teams in a just jam-packed Big 12 that will absolutely make some noise. look, at the end of the day, North Carolina had 70 new players. You heard Reese Davis talk about it last night. 70 new players on the team between transfers and freshmen. Like, man, 70 of 108's just, that's not going to get it done. Like, it's going to take some time. And what was the stat for Gio Lopez? He went like an hour and 12 minutes without completing a pass
ESPN,
or something like that.
ESPN did him wrong.
They did him dirty on that
one. It was like the third quarter, and it said his last completion was like 8:12 Eastern time. And it's like, oh, man. Come on. You can't,
not good.
Do our guy like that. Gio Lopez, the South Alabama quarterback transfer, went 4 of 10, threw for a pick. The QBR was only 1.9, which is not great. But TCU, one of the very few teams in college football that brought back their starting quarterback, head coach, and both coordinators.
So that goes a long way.
It goes
way.
A very, very long way. You talk about the adjustments made after that scripted drive. That right there is a perfect example.
Text box is open if you want to be a part of the show. 334-784-1067. We're about to have Christian sit down with the head coach of Lee Scott Academy football, Buster Daniels. So no phone line open as of now. But somebody did text us in that text box and says, no matter the sport, North Carolina seems inconsistent or insistent on hiring older head coaches. They have seemed out of touch for 20 years in everything they do. Talking North Carolina. Kind of. I mean, Roy Williams was a legend there. I didn't love the Hubert Davis hire, and that still may not go down as a good hire. I don't think Bill Belichick's the answer as a 73-year-old head coach. Did you also see the stat that Bill Belichick, the most points he's ever given up as a head coach before last night at any league, any level, was 47 points. TCU beat it with 48 Jeez. Last night. How about that?
That's...
Yeah.
That hurts.
So it was
girlfriend
not pretty.
Colin plays didn't help.
Yeah, that didn't help him either. But it's okay. We're done talking TCU North Carolina, I promise. Christian sits down with Buster Daniel, the head coach of Lee Scott Academy football, coming up next.
Georgia presents Stone Temple Pilots at Sweetland.
Again, I mentioned Alabama Christian Academy, Lochapoka, and Childersburg. They then go on the road to take on Beulah before back at home for Randolph County. So here is our sit-down interview with Coach Buster Daniel, head coach of the Lee Scott Academy Warriors.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, and it's Tuesday at 2:30, which means we get to continue our high school coverage, and today we get to sit down with Coach Buster Daniel, head coach of the Lee Scott Academy Warriors. Coach, appreciate your time once again. Hopefully had a nice long Labor Day weekend, and it's always easier and a little bit more relaxing when you get a big-time win.
Yeah, that's true, Christian. It's good to talk to you today, and, you know, it was a relaxing weekend, got a little rest, and it was a big win for our guys on Thursday night.
Well, before we dive into the specifics from Lee Scott and Lochapoka, what have you really liked about your team and the camaraderie that you see inside that locker room?
Well, you know, we have talked about building a culture back that we had a few years ago. You know, that's been lacking a little bit around here, but we're talking about building the culture back as a winning culture and you know, do a little character stuff, and I've seen that from my guys, and it showed up on Thursday night. They could have easily laid down and lost that game, but they didn't. They kept fighting back and kept right on pushing through.
What do the seniors mean for this squad? I've talked with so many of the coaches, and they say that this senior group has meant so much, and they don't know if there's been a group that's led as well as this senior group. Talk about what they've meant to your team on the field.
Well, I agree 100% with the coaches. You know, this group is, you know, they may not be as talented across the board as what we've had in previous years. But, you know, what they do have is they got work ethic. They're good kids. They do what you ask them to do. And yes, exactly. They're leading on the field as well as off. You know, they're showing kids how to practice and doing things the right way. And that's the biggest thing for me is doing things the right way.
Year two in the AHSAA for Lee Scott Academy. I know you've had your history in the Alabama High School Athletic Association, but what have you learned going from the AISA to the AHSAA, right? That jump last year and last year being year one, got off to that really nice win streak and had a couple or stumbled your way down the later stretch of the season. What have you learned from last year that carried over to this year to hopefully lead to a lot of success?
Well, the biggest thing is, you know, is I have a coaching staff that over half of them have been in the AHSAA for sure. 20 years or more. So, you know, as far as coaches, we knew what to expect. We knew how it was going to be in this league. you know, and we just had to teach our kids what it's going to be like. And, you know, sometimes you have to go through the fire to see how it burns. And, you know, and that's kind of what we did last year. So our guys understand now that they have to excel every week. They have to do things the right way. They have to do things perfectly to have a chance in games against the teams we play. We don't play any easy teams. There's no where on our schedule you can look and say, oh, we're going to chalk that up on a win. Mm-hmm. There's nowhere on our schedule that does that. So each week, week in and week out, our guys have had to work extremely hard and do things the right way to be successful.
You can't chalk it up before, but Lee Scott Academy 2-0 on the young season, a 40-20 win over the Eagles of Alabama Christian Academy. And then the newborn rivalry, the crosstown rival, the Lochapoca Indians on Thursday night. Lee Scott gets a big time win, 31-21. Did you notice anything with your team being that or playing that game one day early? Was there any fatigue or was there any lack of preparation? Or did you feel like your guys did everything they needed to do to go out and play a day early?
No, I think it was fine. You know, we played Thursday games before. You know, I mean, it's just a day. We just cut out our early morning practice. So, you know, it was really not much of a difference for us. You know, Thursday to Friday, it doesn't really matter. Our guys get prepared the same way. And so I don't think it affected them at all.
How did you see your team react to that rivalry? Just again, it's something that's relatively new, right? Lee Scott gets the first win, 21-12 at their place last year. You saw Lochapoca try to respond, but talk about the adversity that your team overcame to get that big win.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's going to be a good rivalry. You know, they're a really good football team. You know, we didn't play a slouch on Thursday night. They're a really good football team. You know, they made a couple of mistakes that allowed us to win the game. You know, we made less mistakes than they did, and I think that was the reason we ended up on the winning side. But, you know, our guys knew what to expect. They knew it was going to be a good team coming in. You know, just being honest, I watching film, I thought they were better last year. But, you know, we played the game on Thursday. That's why you play the game. I think they're much better this year. They're more athletic. They played harder. They did a lot of things well. The quarterback, man, is outstanding. He's an outstanding athlete and to go along with the other guys, but he was just a standout for them on Thursday. But our guys just, you know, we just had to keep fighting. You know, we made a mistake. They make a mistake. Kind of like a prize fight, you know. We took a punch. They took a punch. We threw a punch. You know, they threw punches. So that's kind of what I likened it to. And, you know, we were fortunate to come out on the winning end of that. It was a great football game, great atmosphere, good guys on their sideline. I know a lot of their coaches. They're really good people, good coaches. It was just one of those good old-fashioned high school football games that you love to watch. And, you know, I enjoyed all of it, and we were fortunate to come out on the winning end.
Four stops in the red zone for Lee Scott Academy. You talk about making mistakes, yes, but also forcing teams into mistakes. We got to talk with Coach Jacob Osmond last week, and he said that the mentality on the defensive side of the football is not turnovers, because that means the offense gave you something. Instead, it's takeaways, and that means the defense going and getting a stop or forcing that takeaway. What did you like from what you saw on the defensive side of the football on Thursday night?
No, just that. I mean, he preaches every day about takeaways, and that, you know, we don't go in and, you know, try to rip the ball out of time. You got to make a tackle, but our guys were trying to get the ball out. They did, like I said, they helped us a little bit, but at the same time, our guys were stingy in the red zone. You know, old thing you say was be in and don't break, and that's what we did on Thursday night. You know, our guys would get backed up, and they would bow the necks and make a stop, and I was so proud of those guys. They could have any time laid down. And, you know, Poker would have scored and put the game away. But our guys kept fighting and doing the things they needed to do to stop them.
Your offense had success early in the game. You felt like late in the second, early in the third, and even into the fourth quarter, it almost felt like it was a game in between the 20s. Lee Scott Academy 24, Lochapoca 21. You get the ball following a fourth down stop and a 97-yard touchdown drive to seal it. Talk about the play calls that went on there and then the adversity, because they had that big run that got called back for the ghost hold, I think I'm allowed to say. But talk about how your team handled that adversity and was still able to march down the field nice it.
Yeah, well, we'll go with the ghost hole, man. That's kind of putting it nicely, and I'll take your call on that one. But no, it's, you know, we talk all the time about being able to run a 4-minute offense, you know, and it's not always 4 minutes, but being able to slow the ball down, being able to get plays in, and our guys again, you know, up front opening holes for Brooks and Braxton and then Max to run the football, you know, and our guys did a great job, you know, taking care of the football. not turning it over at that time, and just eating the clock up. It was a huge drive. I'll say that game for us on Thursday was a character building game. It did a lot for our character and learning how to win. But that drive was big. You know, it was great to see our guys be able to do that.
Four of the first five games for Lee Scott Academy are played at home on Academy Drive at Judd Scott Field. What does that mean for your team and how you're able to continue to get comfortable, continue to get into a rhythm? Because, Coach, now the preseason has come and gone as Region Week starts this week right here.
Yeah, you know, being at home a lot, I mean, I don't know who scheduled this. I'm knucklehead you're talking to right now. But, you know, having all our games at home the beginning of the season, maybe we can build some momentum, you know, get a little confidence to when we do go on the road and, you know, become road warriors, that we're able to take on the team we're playing and the atmosphere and, you know, in the hostile, you know, premises or whatever, you know, but, it's big to be at home early and get the, you know, get some wins under our belt, hopefully, and, just be ready to take on that road test at the end.
Lee Scott Academy 2-0 on the young season, and they welcome the Childersburg Tigers, the first game in 3A region play. Coach, what do you know about that side of the team, or what do you know about that team on the other side of the field, and what are you expecting on Friday night?
Well, you know, Childersburg, you know, they're having a little trouble with football right now. They got a new coach in. He's going to do a good job if they'll give him a chance, but they're kind of young. I got a lot of juniors on the field. You know, the quarterback is another athlete, kind of like what we faced on Thursday night. Running back's a good athlete. We got to be able to contain those guys if we're going to be successful. But, you know, it's a team that's kind of rebuilding with the coaching staff and, you know, trying to become a family like what we have here at Lee Scott, where they play together and you know, fight for each other. But they're 0-2. But, again, that record don't mean anything in this league. You know, we played a team last year with 0-5, and we lost. So we can't take that for granted. We got to prepare just like they're 10-0, you know. So Childersburg has got some good athletes. They'll beat you if you allow them. But again, they're having a little trouble right now getting things going. But I hope it's one more week before they decide to get it going.
I'm talking with Coach Buster Daniel, head coach for Lee Scott Academy football. Last question before we let you get out of here, Coach. If there's a mentality this week or a word to describe your practice on the field this week before you kick off region play, what would that be?
Well, I don't know if it's a word, but we're fixing Lee Scott. You know, we made enough mistakes on Thursday night, to cost us a game down the road when we play another good football team. So we're having to fix us. You know, we got some guys that's not playing extremely hard, not doing things the right way, and we worked on that yesterday at practice. Just working on us, and you know, we got to fix our stuff before we worry about our opponents. So just getting Lee Scott better this week is our biggest thing.
Love it. Lee Scott Academy taking on the Tigers of Childersburg over on AU 100.3 with myself and Rhett Chrome. And Coach, we appreciate your time as always. Good luck on Friday night and go Warriors.
Thanks so much, Christian. Have a great day and go Warriors.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, and appreciate head coach Buster Daniel for Lee Scott Academy football. Joined Christian earlier today. Got a chance to talk about the 2-0 start for the Warriors as they get prepared for the Childersburg Tigers this Friday to start region play. Of course, Auburn High getting started with region play as well. Everybody really getting their region play started coming up in this week, or really the next couple of days as well. And so, again, appreciate head coach Buster Daniel for joining us to get us going here in this first hour. And hey, I want to remind you, it looks like the phone lines are blowing up over there. We're going to try and get to both of them to start hour number two. Couple of phone calls there, so we appreciate them holding on for the next 5 minutes or so. If you need to, you know, dip out, come back, whatever the case may be, we appreciate you being with us. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. The text box is open as well at 334-784-1067. And what to remind you that this Friday on September 5th, that's literally 3 days from now,
You can come join us as ESPN 106.7 will be live on location at Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, brought to you by Sensegreen Heating, Cooling, and Insulation. Both On the Line and The Drive will be live from 2 to 6 p.m. previewing Auburn football's home opener versus Ball State. There will be awesome giveaways from Sensegreen, and we'll be getting the weekend started right at the Midtown Block Party this Friday. ESPN 106.7, we're live on location at Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, brought to you by Sensegreen Heating, Cooling, and Insulation. For air that's cool and clean, you better call Sensegreen. Hour number one, it's in the books. It went by fast, and hour number two will as well. We're getting to the phone lines. We're talking more Auburn-Baylor, and we're officially getting an update from Tuscaloosa. Our man Mike Rodak from Bama 247 joins us to try to explain what the heck happened in Tallahassee over the weekend. All that's coming up in hour number two. Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us on what is just a perfect day, man, in Auburn, Alabama. It's going to warm up over the next couple of days, but it is nice outside right now. We're glad that you're with us, and what a great show it's been so far. If you missed any of the first hour, we got to start the show with a national champion quarterback, Jason Campbell, joined us here today and got to talk to him about his 2004 Auburn Tigers, as they are now national champions for that season. Also got to talk to him about what he saw from this Auburn team out in Waco, as he's a part of the Auburn Sports Network football broadcast. And so a really cool moment, especially for you and I, Christian, to talk to Jason Campbell, a former Auburn quarterback, to start today's show. Talked a little bit of TCU, North Carolina, and then you sat down with Lee Scott Academy's head football coach, Buster Daniel. Talked about a 2-0 start for the Warriors, who kick off region play against Childersburg this Friday. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out wherever you get your podcast or on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we're talking about some position groups for Auburn football that maybe aren't getting the same amount of love that they should. Which position group do we think needs to step up in the future? Because it was Monday, or it was Tuesday's show. It was Monday's show. We were open here on Labor Day, but it was the Monday show where we basically sat there and said, all right, any negativities will not be today. Now we can slowly start working into maybe not even negativities, but things that you expect Auburn to work on because you hear so much about week one to week two being some of the biggest jumps in improvement for the college football season. We're also going to simply revisit how good it feels to be 1-0 in comparison to 0-1 and everything that that Baylor game truly had on the line for that game on Friday night. All of that before we get to Mike Rodak of Bama 24/7 and get his thoughts on, man, the game that happened in Tallahassee, arguably the biggest game of the college football season of week one. But before that, we get to the phone lines, which are open here for the next half hour or so at 334-321-1390. The text box is always open at 334-784-1067. And Andy, we kick off hour number two, starting with you. You're on the line.
War Eagle, boys.
Good to hear from you, Andy. We appreciate you holding on through the break, my friend.
Absolutely. Hey, fired up, pumped up. This was an important one for me, for all of us. So great win. I liked it on a Friday so we could spend all day Saturday watching these other teams. And, with Jason Campbell, he was, when I was a student here, he was getting booed. I think before him we had Cox and maybe Leard. And then I remember the next year I was over in Korea at 3 o'clock in the morning and we're beating Florida and storming the field. So That was a valuable lesson that just let the quarterbacks grow up, let them mature. And the older they get, the better they get. And, while I was so against firing Gus and just letting Bo marinate like he did.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, Gus proved the haters wrong. Maybe someday, y'all will have enough time go by where y'all can admit being wrong. But great win. I am a little concerned about how much we did run it. Last year we had the best running back and all we did was pass it. Now we have the best receivers. And I know I'm not saying that's how we're going to be, but
sure.
It's still a little weird to see so little. And it's not like Freeze learned his lesson from last year. You know, he's done learning lessons. He's not going to learn something at this day of the game. So
I disagree, though, Andy. I disagree.
Really?
I think he did learn, because he even admitted, he admitted in the post game and yesterday in his weekly presser, he admitted how hard it was to not throw the football. He wanted to get it to Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton and Pear. Like, he admitted he wanted to, but it was just so obvious that you needed to run the football, and that's exactly what they did. So I think he learned in this game, but Andy, here's the catch. Can he learn moving forward? Can he do it in other games where other teams don't stack the box against you?
Right. And you're right. I was trying to listen as much as him post-conference and at the restaurant last night. I agree with you, but there was a lot of times last year that he's like, we should run the ball more. And then
I agree.
Yeah. So I don't know what – I don't believe these coaches in these press conferences, like any athlete that has someone write their messages for him. But anyways, so excited. I do not want to put any negativity on this. It was such a good game. Anytime Baylor scored, we scored back, and it was so fun watching that quarterback. Like I said, I know he wanted the pass. Was it because the quarterback can't make the pass? I just wish they would have aired the ball up a couple times that worked out. But that's all I really want to call about. I'm glad you got your Green Bay guy.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's excited you. Do you mind if I do a 20-second plug real quick?
Okay. Go ahead.
Hey, if anyone's listening out there that's in college and you need to smash some skulls because the studying, you need a study break, come out to rugby Tuesday, Thursday. If you're looking for brotherhood, unlike the football team, you got to pay to play. You don't get paid, but it's a great opportunity to get out there and get some frustration out and make some friends for life and just be part of the Auburn team. War Eagle, love you guys.
Appreciate it, Andy. Appreciate the call. Appreciate your comments and thoughts out there as well. I'm talking about this Auburn team, their win against Baylor, and his thoughts there. And a lot that I want to get to and address, but we've had Ty the Tiger hanging on through the break as well. He's hung on for a long time. What's up, Ty the Tiger? It's good to hear from you, my friend.
Oh, man. I just you used to talk about how beautiful a day it is. Just the air smells.
It's got that 1-0 feeling, doesn't it, Ty? That
1-0
feeling.
Baby.
That's
one
right.
1-0.
Tell me how you feel, my man.
Well, fun fact, guys. If you take how much we paid Gene Chizik to leave, how much we paid Gus Malzahn to leave, and how much we paid Brian Harsin to leave, and you add them all together, it still is not as much as they fixing to pay DeBort leave. It's just funny that one thing I've been teasing my Bama fans about is they always know which what's this buyout, when is this one gonna get, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's been kind of good, this, because it ain't been us saying, hey, look, just like I always heard my Bama fans, man, I hey, y'all need to sign Gus to another contract. Hey, y'all got this guy for 8 years and 70 mil. No, 7 years now, but 7 years, 70 mil. Wow. Feels good to be an Auburn Tiger, but enough about them. Man, I'm going to tell you about us. I got to see us throw the ball more, but to run the ball like that was very, very, very good to start a game off, but it's still not sold. I don't think we're in the top 25 for a reason. I think Baylor's going to be a good team in the Big 12, but, you know, an 8-4 team in the Big 12, I mean, that's 3-9 in the SEC. I mean, that's not going to cut the mustard. So we got two more warm-up games to get some more passing games, settle down. And, guys, I mean, now I did talk to one guy, and I forget about this, but, you know, a lot of these universities are not doing tackling, you know, a lot of tackling like we used to grow up doing. Yeah, I didn't know play college ball, but just what, you know, what we used to do, and they don't do a lot of tackling. It shows right. Saturday.
Well, they're scared tackled. Of getting guys hurt, Ty, and I mean, and most coaches admit it. I mean, Hugh Freeze definitely has, and most of these P4 coaches have admitted it. They just they refuse to go fully live because they don't want their guys to get hurt on both sides of the football.
Well, like I said, it showed Saturday. We couldn't tackle for crap. I mean, the offense looked good, and to score 38 points on the road against a Power 5, I mean, when's the last time we did that?
It's been a while.
You know, we couldn't even do that versus Cal last year. Anybody that deserved it, I mean, we couldn't even pull that out. I would like to know when the last time we scored 38 points on the road versus the SEC or Power 5. It's been a while.
Arkansas 2023 would be my guess, Ty, when Auburn went on the road and just obliterated the Razorbacks.
I forgot about that one, but it's been a while. It's been a couple of years, so I think this Baylor team looked better than that Arkansas team.
I agree.
Yeah,
Baylor looked good. And Baylor's going to make some noise in the Big 12.
And again, I think they are. I think they got a good passing attack. I don't think they had a good game plan. They should have changed things up. I mean, we just like you said. I mean, it was like you said. He just said, "Man, if you're just going to let me run it 7 yards on first down, then I can do whatever. You know, we can pass it, we can toss it, we can jet sweep, we can do whatever we want." But it was good to see a kickoff return. I mean, we like you were saying earlier, we checked every little, like the running game, we checked every little box to say, okay, we're going to be pretty good this year. And our schedule, again, two more warm-up games, and then we go on the road, and then we're going to see what type of team we really are. So I'm not, you know, booking my own, you know, playoff tickets just yet or SEC tickets just yet on like some of these Auburn, like, oh, we're back, man. I gotta see a little bit more, but man, I'm excited, and we look real good. And Bama looked real bad.
That's right. Ty, appreciate you, my man. Always good to hear from you, brother.
Good one.
Ty the Tiger joining us, as well as Andy, who both called in right before we started the second hour. We appreciate them being a part of the show. You can be a part of the show as well, 334-321-1390. Looks like somebody is joining us as we speak. Let's throw it to him, 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, buddy.
What's up, Spectre? What's on your mind, my man?
Well, did you get on that Gus bus like I told you?
I'm on it now, buddy. I'm on it now.
Yeah, we whooped him. Hey, listen, Gus does it best when he's an offensive coordinator. We always knew that. And, you know, he was his own worst enemy when he was Auburn's coach. And he quit. He got away from calling the plays, and then he all of a sudden decided he didn't want to recruit an offensive line to protect a five-star quarterback. So tell it like it is.
Yeah. I mean, look, Gus was having a lot of fun on Saturday, and what's so crazy, Spectre, is we talked about this on the show yesterday. There was nothing different that Gus was doing in this game on Saturday versus Florida State than what he did against Alabama at Auburn in 2013. It's the same offense. You just have to find ways to stop it and keep up with it, and you're right. The fact that he's no longer a head coach, all he's got to do is call plays and get his guys in the right spot on the offensive side of the football. He's living his best life down in Tallahassee.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be, I'd hire him as an offense coordinator at Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, you may get to that point. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, we're 1-0. But like Ty the Tiger says, you know, I ain't convinced either. I'll be convinced after the Oklahoma game if we roll over them like we did for who the hell we play?
Baylor.
Baylor. Okay. Yeah. If we do that, I'll be somewhat convinced.
Okay. All right, Spectre. All right. We appreciate it, man. Good to hear from you as well, Spectre. 334-321-1390. Phone lines open for another 15 minutes or so here on this Tuesday afternoon. Lots to break down.
Lots to break down. I guess we'll work with Spectre. Yeah, I mean, the Oklahoma game is going to be fascinating. The more you dive into this game, just because of Brent Venables, BV, being that defensive mind, has a great defense all the time, and the fact that he was able to coach this quarterback with that defensive mind for so long, saw a lot of the success, saw some of the failure, and so that will really be when Auburn gets truly tested, not only because it's an SEC opponent, but because the head coach knows so much about this quarterback. And you can go back, he can go back and watch film from last year when he was playing for his team. And so that will be the next true test. Going back to Ty the Tiger, I mean, talking about how nice is it that we can come on this show this week, 1-0, long pause. We come on here 1-0, and the fact that our worry was the defense. Isn't that kind of, I mean, yes, it's a concern in itself, but it feels relieving that it's not, all right, same old story, man. The defense gave up 13 points, and Auburn had to fight just to put up 17. You're at the point of, all right, not even schematically, or maybe it might have been, but all right, tackling. That was the biggest worry in week one. You feel like working from week one to week two, and the more you get into this season, those are going to iron themselves out. They're not major problems of, holy cow, look at all of these blown coverages. They looked like there was absolutely no idea what was going on the defensive side of the football. I will stick with that. How nice is it that our one worry, our one true worry, comes on the defensive side of the football?
And to that point that Ty was talking about before we get to break, the whole tackling thing and practicing not tackling and not going truly live in fall camp and things, I've spoken about this, and it's one of the first times that I'm truly the back in my day or the purist mindset, but like, here's the way I think about it. And I'm not a head coach, and it's not my responsibility. I don't have 105, 108 guys on my team, or my job relies on their health, right? And their safety and all that. But in sports, you can't play scared. You can't practice scared. Because if you do, you're setting yourself up for failure more times than not.
Yeah.
And in sports, in my opinion, this is just what I believe, and I don't have this in any ill will at all when I say this. If somebody's going to get hurt, they're going to get hurt. You can't put bubble wrap around them and hope to God and pray that they don't break their leg. And then if you get through a practice, like, oh man, we dodged a bullet today. Hope he doesn't get hurt on Saturday. Hope that SEC linebacker doesn't pop him in the ribs the wrong way. You know what I mean? Like, in my opinion, what's going to happen is going to happen. Whether you prepare for it or protect your guys or not, it's just, it's sports. And especially in football, where there's so much contact and, well, there are scary hits and scary plays and things, and there are freak accidents, unfortunately, but I'm not saying in practice go full 1975 and let's practice without our helmets and see who can knock each other out first.
Yeah,
but
straight Oklahoma drill, no blockers. You right. line up and you line right. up. Start 8 yards apart. There's no juke moves. There's no spins. Run the other one over.
But I don't know. You have to be ready for that. And tackling somebody in the Ball State game is not going to get you ready to tackle somebody against Oklahoma. And Auburn got away with it against Baylor, but you do have to get better in that mindset and in that category, in my opinion. So I don't know. And I don't know how you fix it, because that is stressful.
Well, I feel like that's where all of these coaches are at right now. They're trying to find that middle ground of, we understand that we can't, keep these guys from going out onto the field and practicing 50-50 balls in the back of the end zone. God forbid a wide receiver lands on the cornerback, or the cornerback lands on the receiver wrong and twists his ankle, or they fall together and get locked up, things like that. But you're also trying to find, again, that middle ground of, you can still have those, but trying to limit reps, because yes, you can't be the judge, or you can't be somebody that doesn't allow reps, but yes, injuries can happen, but limiting the reps also limit the amount of possibilities for injuries, and so it's that weird little middle ground that so many of these coaches talked about. We heard even Harsin talked about it when he was here, but Freeze especially saying in the first couple years of, we don't have the talent or the depth to allow these guys to get hurt, and when they did on the field, you noticed a very, very big drop-off.
The thing I take away from those phone calls, and we got to get to break, fans are happy, but they're not satisfied.
I think that's how it should be.
And I think that's how it should be. I think that's a good way to put it. You beat a good Baylor team on the road to do what you were supposed to do. You have two games to get better, get right, get healthy, and then you got to start doing it in SEC play. We'll talk about that and more when we come back. Phone lines are continuing to be open. Again, we have a guest coming up at 3:30, and so if you want to call in, now is your chance to do so. 334-321-1390. We continue talking Auburn football after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. There's smoke coming out of the phone because it is lighting up on this Tuesday afternoon. We get right back to it, 334-321-1390. We start with Terry. You're on the line, my friend.
Hey, Jacob. Hey, Chris. How y'all doing today?
Doing good, well. Terry. Good to hear from you.
Good talk to y'all. I think Baylor is going to win a lot of games this year, 48-30, because I don't think their defense is very good at all. And that's surprising with Miranda as the head coach.
I think they have some dudes on the defensive side of the football. I was not overly impressed with the unit itself, but that's also not the defense that Baylor's going to run all season long either. They were so worried and scared of Auburn's passing game. That's not the true Dave Aranda defense, and I think Christian said this yesterday. It was surprising to see him not adjust, or maybe I think Jason Campbell said that earlier in the show today too. It was surprising to not see that be adjusted mid-game from Dave Aranda.
Well, knowing how they play football in the Big 12, I'm not going to be surprised if they don't win a bunch of games 48-30.
But you still have them winning a bunch of games, Terry.
Yeah, I do. I do. I think their offense is good enough to carry them in that conference. I do.
I agree.
I think that offense is better.
I don't think anybody can cover that tight end.
Auburn made their offense look mediocre, but I'm telling you, they're going to light some people up in the Big 12.
Mediocre? They threw for 419 yards.
But only scored 24 points.
Well, they're right. You're right.
That's the Durkin way right there. Obviously not necessarily that way, but hey, we'll give up yards between the 30s, and then all of a sudden you get into crunch time, you start scrunching the defense, and you saw how it worked out.
And the other thing, guys, do y'all think Auburn fans as a whole have any idea the kind of difficulty the Malzahn, the last 2 years of Malzahn, and then the Harsin hire left them in talent-wise?
I think so. At this point, I think you're seeing the difference in the product on the field just from pure talent, from what you saw on Friday night compared to, down the stretch of Malzahn through Harsin and then those first 2 years of Hugh Freeze and what he had to do with the lack of talent on the team. I think it's visibly apparent now.
Because Malzahn had quit recruiting and Harsin didn't recruit anybody.
Correct.
So I just don't think Auburn fans as a whole have any idea, really, honestly. And a lot of them don't care. They just go support the team on Saturdays.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, there's nothing we can do about that, Terry, you know?
Take care, guys.
Appreciate it, Terry. Good to hear from you, my friend. 334-321-1390. We continue on with the phone lines. Daniel, you're on the line. I got a couple of minutes for you, man.
Hey, guys. I'll be super quick. Just wanted you guys to draw your attention to Florida's schedule coming up. It is just absolutely, it's fake looking if you just look at it. I mean, looking at these teams that are ranked, I think they have three opponents that aren't ranked left, including this week against
against a South Florida team that just put up 34 on Boise State.
Yeah. If you guys want to, feel free to just go through their schedule and tell me your thoughts on what kind of season they could have, because it is just brutal.
Yeah, will do. Thanks, Daniel. We appreciate you calling. Appreciate you holding on. It's funny you bring that up. Because Christian and I, sitting in the studio about 30 minutes before the show today, we pulled up their schedule. I don't remember why we pulled it up, but we looked back through it. Oh, I was looking at the Miami schedule. I was looking at Miami, who jumped up to number 5 in the AP poll today. And I was like, who does Miami have left?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, that week 4 game against Florida has really become interesting now as a top 15 matchup in the country as of right now. And I said, wait, I forgot that Florida plays Miami.
And it's
who
right
else
in the
do they play?
Yep.
And that's exactly what we digested. So it's funny that Daniel brings that up.
Yeah. South Florida this weekend, which is, I guess, supposed to be another gimme game. But again, we saw what South Florida did to Boise State. There were a couple people that were jumping on South Florida as their G5 team to make the college football playoff before that game. And so now they're riding that high even more. You then go to Death Valley, which you can say is the real one now, in Baton Rouge to take on LSU. You're then back on the road, back in your home state, but to Miami, trying to get revenge from Miami walking into the swamp last year with Cam Ward and running that place completely dry. Then you host number 7 Texas before you go to Aggieland. Those are a brutal 4 straight weeks from September 13th to October 11th, and then you get Mississippi State as your get over game.
Your week off.
Yeah, before you go to Jacksonville to take on Georgia in the neutral site, at Kentucky, at Ole Miss, hosting Tennessee. And then another game that could be really, really interesting, the ACC-SEC game of Florida State and Florida to finish up the year. We've talked about it since the beginning of the season, or since these schedules came out, of if Florida can go 8-4, that shows they're one of the best rosters and the best teams in college football.
No doubt about it. And look, I hope they're going to give Billy Napier some grace down there. If he pulls off a couple of these wins, you've got to be happy with that schedule. So appreciate everybody calling in. It's been a fun show so far. We continue after this with updates from Tuscaloosa. Our man Mike Rodak of Bama247 tells us what in the world happened against Florida State in Tallahassee over the weekend. He joins us after this.
We're halfway through hour number 2. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. And we get to the phone lines and welcome in a guest we've had on a couple of times and excited to have him back on the air. He writes for Bama247 covering the Alabama Crimson Tide. It's our man Mike Rodak up in Tuscaloosa. Man, we appreciate you hopping on and joining us today. And I guess for you and a lot of the Alabama fans, they probably wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, man, it's September 2nd, and I feel like I've gone through the entire season already, given the last 4 or 5 days here. It's only one game, but I'm exhausted, I'll say that, after the last few days.
I can imagine. I mean, there's so many emotions and so many different angles to attack what happened on Saturday in Tallahassee, Alabama, and Florida State. And going to open up the floor for you here to get this thing started. What did happen in your mind and your opinion covering this game and just kind of watching it all unfold? What happened to Kalen DeBoer in Alabama on Saturday afternoon?
Say more of what we saw last season, which is a team that is not as good as it once was. You know, it's obviously slipped, and you could say that was true the last couple years of the Saban era too. I mean, that wasn't as good of a team as it was, you know, let's say 2020. And the portal has played into that, NIL has played into that, a lot of things have played into that, and you kind of get to a point where they're very beatable. Now, they're also capable of winning more than I think they have, and sure, they've shown that, you know, with the games that they won last year on the road at LSU, the Georgia game, et cetera. But just baffling how they, especially on the road, really just play down to their opponents. And this is another unranked opponent. Obviously, Florida State's ranked now. They weren't ranked at the time. And just, you think Alabama's the better team, and they just don't show it. And this wasn't even a game where it was a bunch of turnovers and, I mean, penalties were a problem, but it just wasn't a super sloppy game. It was just a game where Alabama looked overpowered. And you knew that when Tim Keenan, their defensive tackle, went down in practice, that was going to be a big deal. He was a pretty indispensable player. And, you know, that did show up. And you have a 3-star freshman on the field in London Simmons getting a lot of playing time, who just enrolled a couple months ago. You have a running back in Kevin Riley who led them in rushing with 31 yards, who was 5th on the depth chart to begin fall camp. There's just a lot of places in the roster you could kind of look and be like, man, this is not how it used to be. And that's part of it. But the psychological, the effort part, you know, kind of the intangibles that Alabama once was known for, people didn't see. And that's the other part of the conversation. You know, guys who are obviously more well-trained in watching football than I am, Greg McElroy and AJ McCarron and players, ex-players like that, they didn't see that effort. They didn't see that physicality. They didn't see any of that.
Right.
And that is a problem. And you just wonder, can it be fixed? Or is it more of a systemic problem within the whole organization?
Mike, you can tell us if we're wrong, but obviously here in the Auburn area, trying to do as much research with this game, we didn't feel like the overall feel of this game was that Alabama had too many concerns, or at least on the fan base side of things about this game. It was much more of the, man, look what Norvell did last year, 2-10, you bring in a Boston College quarterback, there's no way that we need to be concerned about this game. Do you feel like that could be a correct statement and that might be a reason why this loss hurts that much more?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to tell with Florida State. You just didn't know.
Right.
And I think there were some warning signs, not warning signs, but there was at least things that you could point to going into the game where you're like, Alabama could lose the game because of that, whether it was playing on the road, playing in, you know, the rain at one point, Gus Malzahn and his offense, and you don't know what it's going to look like, and the transfers that Florida had. Like, there's, and then the injuries that Alabama had, Jam Miller and Tim Keenan especially, you didn't really know what exactly was going to happen. I walked in there thinking, yes, there's a chance that they lost that or could lose that game. I didn't think it was going to be as, not lopsided, but it was pretty emphatic. Like, Florida State, after that first drive from Alabama, won the rest of the game, like, yeah, without a doubt. And honestly, there was breaks in the game that fell Alabama's way. That muff punt, Ty Simpson throwing the ball up when he shouldn't have, and they ended up recovering the ball, Alabama did, when that could have easily gone the other way, you know, for Florida State. So it wasn't a fluky game. And, it was, I guess, surprising in the sense that Florida State's 2-10 last year and they go and beat Alabama. But like I said, you know, this is an Alabama team that was 9-4 last year, and they lost two really good players in Tyler Booker and Jahad Campbell and some other good players as well. And I don't know if, like, you kind of look at the pluses and minuses of this roster and say this was a better Alabama team coming in to this year. I think people just expected them to be more consistent and play better, and that just didn't happen.
We're talking with Mike Rodak of Bama 247 here on ESPN 106.7, getting the insights and the scoop on what Alabama did and did not do against Florida State this past Saturday, dropping their first game of the season to the Seminoles 31-17. And you mentioned expectations, or what you expect from Alabama. And I want to go back to something you mentioned a few minutes ago with some of those key injuries that we did see in fall camp. When Nick Saban was there, they had injuries, but there was always somebody to fill that spot. There was never a major concern when a starting linebacker went down, or a starting running back, or whoever the case may be, because you always felt, well, there's somebody else there to fill the gap. Do you think that this is a Kalen DeBoer problem, that maybe there wasn't that guy there, or it's a talent issue, or just kind of the changing of the times here?
All the above. I think it's a combination of everything. Because, yeah, I mean, the talent is still very good. Like, relative to the rest of college football, Alabama's roster is still right up there. I don't think anybody's questioning that. But it's not as it was 5 or 10 years ago, where it just layers upon layers of depth. And that's really hard to accomplish in this day and age of college football, especially with Alabama not having as deep pockets as other schools out there, Oregon, for instance. And so, yeah, you have an injury, like defensive tackle is a perfect example. Like, Keenan goes down, you don't really have a bunch of guys that are experienced or even, you know, really blue chip players. You're relying on, like I said, a 3-star freshman in London Simmons. And I think it's a little bit of a problem that they went out into the portal and they did get an experienced player in Kelby Collins, who is from Alabama, went to Florida for 2 years. And he's nowhere to be found in this game, essentially. He was their 6th defensive tackle, got 3 snaps in the game. You know, running back, you have your starting running back go down. Well, you went into the portal and you got a 5th-year senior in Dre Washington, and he really didn't play either. So some of the portal guys that they brought in were just not really there, and you're kind of digging deeper into some other players. So, like, again, that's just kind of the day and age of college football, but at the same time, like, I think it is on the coaching staff to get those players ready and to develop some of those players, or maybe it's on the coaching staff that Washington wasn't playing well or Collins wasn't practicing well, et cetera. Again, it's just, it's a conglomeration of different things, and I don't know if it's just one thing singularly that's holding Alabama back right now.
You obviously only truly see on social media the 1%, whether that's the really, really good or the really, really bad. Obviously, people are calling for Kalen DeBoer's name already, and don't mean for this to sound like gotcha media, but how much of that is just right now the raw feelings of that loss, and how much of that comes from, well, it being Gus Malzahn calling plays on the other side of the football field?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of the image of Gus standing on the sideline, I'm sure, haunted Alabama fans a little bit. But I think it's different than other years because, you know, Alabama's lost games before.
Sure.
The Texas game a few years ago was one. The LSU game in 2019. The Ole Miss games 10 years ago. Like, there's been times when that's happened. And obviously, the sky is falling after those losses. And I think Alabama fans kind of brushed it off. And, you know, we're still here and all that. And they were generally right. And I think now it just feels a little bit different. Now that you're stacking these losses up, and you have Vandy last year, and Tennessee, and Oklahoma, and Michigan, and now you have Florida State, it's harder to say this is just a one-off deal. And especially now that it's year two, it's harder to say, well, that's just growing pains from year one. And, you know, Kalen DeBoer is the first person to say that. He said yesterday, we can't just call these learning moments anymore. And it's just, you sense a more dire, more urgent feeling around that building just to get things fixed. Because, yeah, I mean, the standard's high. And you lose a few more games, obviously you're out of the playoff at that point. And then I think it's certainly within the conversation of whether Kalen DeBoer continues as a coach. If you don't make the playoff this year, especially if it's 4, 5, 6 losses, something that bad.
Our guy Mike Rodak of Bama 247 with us on the phone lines here on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn, Opelika. So now that Alabama has moved past this Florida State game, 0-1, what next now? Mike, where does Bama go from here? Because while it does hurt to be 0-1 and losing to Florida State in a game that the Crimson Tide was favored by a couple of touchdowns, it's not a loss in the SEC. It is just week one, and there is plenty of time for Alabama to make up for this. So where does Kalen DeBoer and this football team go from here?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a more intense practice, or at least a practice where I think they said today coaches were fed up, and you know, they went out and got after it today, and that's all they can really do. I mean, I don't know if there's been a dramatic shift in tone or approach from Kalen DeBoer. He's always very kind of even keeled in his approach, but I think he's also realizing that, you know, A, with his players, he needs to kind of tighten the screws a little bit and really clamp down, and B, kind of with his messaging as well, kind of say something different than what he's been saying all along. So I don't know if there's a dramatic shift in terms of what they do. I don't know if they're benching a bunch of players or any of that, but I think they just need to play a little bit looser. That's one of the themes I think Kalen's going to talk about. And at the same time, also play a little bit more disciplined and play a little bit more aggressively. So look, I think they're going to have a good game this weekend. I think that's set up to be the case with ULM coming in. I'm sure there'll be talk about get right and correcting things and better feelings and all that. But they go to Georgia 3.5 weeks from now. And that's going to be a big one where I think if you aren't competitive in that game, that's a big problem for Kalen DeBoer. If you lose that game, it's still a problem, but you know, you're really putting yourself in a tough spot going into October.
You have ULM this weekend for the Crimson Tide, a night game at Bryant-Denny Stadium, 6:45 on the SEC Network. You mentioned that game against Georgia on the road, another night game on September 27th, but a tricky home game against Wisconsin squeezed in the middle of those two as well. And so a lot of questions for Alabama, whether they get answered or not this weekend. Guess we'll have to wait and see. You then have Wisconsin and that road game against Georgia as well. He writes for Bama 247, our man Mike Rodak with us on the phone lines. Man, plug it all. Tell people where they can find all of your content and what you guys have coming up over the next several days and what will be a highly anticipated weekend in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, Bama247.com and on X at Mike Rodak.
Man, we appreciate your time hopping on here talking about the Alabama Crimson Tide. We hope to do it again real soon.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Mike Rodak, check it out. Bama 247. They've got you covered on all of the Alabama news and drama, I would say. And he admitted that at the beginning. He said, man, it feels like we've been through a whole season already, and we're just 1 week in to the college football season. Been a long time since they've had that sort of stress up in Tuscaloosa.
Mike, we know the feeling.
Yeah, we've been there. We have been there, my friend. But I really do mean it when I told him and said, like, if you're Alabama, I understand that the sky is falling and that all hell has broke loose and right. They want DeBoer's face on a, you know, on a platter outside of Bryant Denny. I get that. But realistically, you have the entire season left. Like, I know it looked bad, and I would like to talk more. We kind of did yesterday. It looked bad. But you can still turn this thing around if, you know, you still have chances to do that. You're not going to learn anything this weekend. Sorry, you're not. It's ULM, night game at Bryant Denny. You're not learning anything about your team.
You hope.
You hope. Yeah, I mean, you may learn even more bad things about this team if that's the case. But you'll learn something next week against Wisconsin.
Sure.
You're more talented than Wisconsin if you're Alabama. Yeah. I've watched that team. They struggled. They barely beat Miami of Ohio.
It was 3-0 at halftime, I believe.
Yeah, 17-0 was the final score. Like, come on now. You're better than Wisconsin, and this game's at home compared to being in Madison last year. But is there anything, I'll kind of open this question up, is there anything that Alabama can do in the next 2 weeks that gives them the confidence back to go on the road and beat Georgia in Athens for a night game?
From the standpoint of execution, I think so. If you're seeing all of the little things done right, I think that gives confidence inside the building. Outside, I would say no, just because you're expected to slaughter Louisiana Monroe and arguably Wisconsin as well. But I think from the inside, I would say yes, just because I've seen how quickly things can get turned around if you start capitalizing on those little things and those become the big things, and then you let the results take care of themselves. But like what you're saying, it is only week one, and respectfully, it's week one on both sides of the spectrum, with Auburn and with Alabama. It's crazy to sit there and think about if the tides were reversed or the roles were reversed, how different these conversations would be, yet how similar these conversations would be. You just flip the fan bases.
And we talked going into the season, too, how similar the feelings were in both Tuscaloosa and in Auburn with Hugh Freeze and Kalen DeBoer, even though Freeze is a year ahead of DeBoer, of course, at their respective locations, how similar the feelings were of have to get off to a good start, have to win some big games, got to beat your rivals, and can't come up short of whatever the expectations were. While the expectations are clearly different to start the season, right, the feelings were eerily similar for Alabama fans and Kalen DeBoer and Hugh Freeze fans, or for Auburn fans and Hugh Freeze, and here we are, one team's off to a nice start, 1-0, and the other one is 0-1. Which is why we stressed, how good does it feel, Auburn fans? You heard it from a guy that covers Alabama on a daily basis. What he's hearing, what he's seeing from Alabama fans. I don't care if you liked the win against Baylor or not, or how it looked. It's better to be 1-0 than it is to be 0-1.
Just from a heart rate standpoint, from a stress standpoint.
The next 2 weeks for Auburn fans are going to be fun. The next 2 weeks for Alabama fans are going to be miserable. Miserable.
There's so much more that went into that Baylor win than just a win on the scoreboard. Because, again, how quickly and how similar these roles could be reversed of if Auburn went out to Baylor and lost. All of a sudden, we come on here and the fan base is livid. We don't even have to do a show on Monday. We're just going to sit here and press the green button because of all the phone calls that are coming in. And the Auburn fan base would have zero confidence these next 2 weeks before you go to OU.
Correct.
But now, Jordan Hare is going to be completely sold out next Saturday because everybody's bought in. Everybody loved what they saw in week one. Everybody continues to have the hype, and now you can continue to build before you get tested again. You have that feel good, and the moxie is back from the fan base. And so much of that was why we emphasized getting a week one win.
Winning is such a crazy drug.
It is. It's crazy. Again, it's week one.
and this you see the split.
Yes.
And the difference when you lose week one and you win week one.
A conversation that we don't have time for, but goes to show why preseason... Never mind. Not even Florida State's the 13th ranked team in the country now, if that helps anybody.
Speaking of making a catch of the football... No, I'm just kidding. All right, we do have to get to break. More on that. I have to get my rant in on that some point.
We got time when we come back. We'll make it quick.
No, we don't. No, we don't. I promise you we don't. We have to get to break and come back and wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We do that next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on a Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. What a fun show today. I feel like we say that all the time, but today really, really was a fun show. Guest heavy, caller heavy, and just a lot of good conversation today.
Yeah.
If you missed any of it, go back, catch it with the podcast. You can find it wherever you get your podcast or on our station website at ESPNAU.com. We started the show today with Jason Campbell, former Auburn quarterback, now national champion. Of course, he's on the Auburn Sports Network football crew as well. Started the show talking with him over the phone about being a national champion in 2004, some of his favorite memories from that team, and also got his thoughts on Auburn versus Baylor, what he saw in the booth in Waco, Texas. So got him on the phone. Also, Christian sat down with Lee Scott Academy's head football coach Buster Daniel for their weekly visit. Got to talk about the Warriors starting 2-0, previewing their region matchup against Childersburg this Friday. And we just got off the phone with Mike Rodak of Bama 247. Got his thoughts on Alabama starting the season 0-1 for the first time in a long time, plus a ton of your calls reacting to Baylor and Auburn. So that was on today's show. Check it out, ESPNAU.com. Coming up tomorrow, we're talking AP poll. We're talking to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, and we're talking to Double D, Daryl Dapperidge for Double D Wednesdays.
And starting to break down some of these week two games. You don't really think week two is a pretty good schedule, but the slate, not too shabby.
Sneaky good in week two of college football. That's coming up and more right here, 2-4 tomorrow on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.